Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we explore this idea of how creativity intersects with student learning. And I'm on this journey as well. I'm trying to figure out what it means to boost creativity and innovation in my own practice. And so consider this as much a reflection as a chance to get new information. So today we're going to talk about how you design group projects so that every student participates. And it's part of our creative collaboration series that we're doing. We have a couple more left in it, but that's kind of the idea of what we're going for here. And so let's go ahead and dive right in. Let's just put it out there. Group work sucked for most of us when we were in school. You had one person who did most of the work, two people who did the bare minimum, and one person who disappeared altogether or just sat around doing nothing. When I was in school, I was either the one who did most of the work or the one who did the bare minimum. I was never the kid who disappeared. If it was a project that I cared about, I was hooked. If the project didn't feel authentic to me, I was happy doing just enough to get a B. However, I never understood the students who still did nothing in a group, so I chalked it up to laziness. I thought they were just not even trying. That was my basic idea when I saw that kid that never did anything. And I would honestly get really angry when they would get the same grade as I got, because I thought, you know what, I deserve a B, that person deserves an A, and that person over there deserves an F. But years later, when I became a teacher, I realized that students are complicated. Sometimes when a kid seems checked out, he's really just scared or insecure. His peers might see a flat demeanor and an I don't care attitude, but when you meet with that kid one-on-one, you find out he's terrified of screwing up the group's project. Other times you might have a student who doesn't know where to start. She wants to do a great job, but the group seems to move seamlessly through tasks and she can't even get started. The point is, it's complicated. And it's complicated because kids are complicated. So why isn't this student participating in a group project? If you consider the reasons they aren't participating, you'll notice that it varies from group to group. It might be insecurity. This kid is insecure and afraid of doing subpar work, so it's easier to just give up ahead of time. It could be the difficulty level. A member might not have the skills to do a particular task, so it's easier to let someone else with more expertise handle it. Confusion. A group member might just not know what to do. If there's a lack of clarity in terms of tasks or in terms of how to accomplish those tasks, this kid just feels out of the loop, and so he or she checks out. Unmotivated. A group member might have no motivation to do the project at all and generally thinks it's boring and is perfectly fine getting a D. And that does happen. That might look like laziness, but it's just clearly a lack of motivation. Nobody has engaged that particular student. It could be a lack of buy-in. A group member doesn't have a sense of ownership and feels like other people own the project, and so she's perfectly fine stepping away and letting the other group members do the work. So that's the idea. Those are the reasons that kids are checked out. So what's the solution? I think the answer lies in ownership. Even in our best projects, I never had 100% engagement at all times. So I can't promise a magical formula that you can use to fix every single problem with collaborative projects. But I did have projects where nearly every student participated most of the time, and that's pretty good. These were the projects when we had shifted from group projects to creative collaboration. Here, students were empowered with a sense of ownership. However, student ownership isn't simply an answer of leave kids alone and let them get the work done on their own. I mean, that's often what student ownership sounds like in a group project. And I tried that a few times, but the groups checked out and didn't finish their work at all. Students need structure for ownership to work. On the other hand, groups checked out when I created rigid systems and structures and super tight rules. So it's got to be a structure, but it's got to be loose enough that every kid feels they can participate. If they felt too constricted, they would lose interest and put in the bare minimum effort. So if they didn't have enough structure, on the other hand, then they would just not even get started because they didn't know what to do. So the goal then is to provide these structures that facilitate ownership and flexibility while also providing as much freedom as possible. That's the idea. Let's go back to the reasons why students fail to participate and consider how student ownership might help prevent these issues. In the case of insecurity, which was one of the things, right? Students need to know that it's okay to make mistakes. This is why it's critical that they own the assessment process. As they move through self-assessment, peer assessment, and feedback, as well as, you know, one-on-one conferencing with teachers, they are able to set goals and move toward mastery. This is why, by the way, I never graded the finished product in group projects. Actually didn't grade their process either. Instead, each student received an individual grade on the mastery of the specific standards. The project was just a chance to provide evidence of mastery. And this eased some of the pressure of letting a group down. They still wanted the projects to be good, but there was a sense of like relief that the kid who's obsessed with an A could still get an A even if another kid in his group screws up, right? It also helps to provide plenty of revision time. In the launch cycle, we have the highlight and fix phase, where perfection isn't even possible for anyone. Every group analyzes what's working and fixes what's failing. Note here the difference between failing and failure. Failing is temporary. It's a learning process, but failure is permanent. We want students to recognize what's failing without having to fall into failure. Even in the midst of all of this, you'll have moments when a student has mastered a skill and they'll step it up and they'll try to complete it for a student who's struggling in a group project. However, this is a skill that all students must develop, and honestly, it's hard to figure out when to let somebody struggle and when not to let someone struggle. It's natural for struggling students to disengage when a task is too difficult. In flow theory, there's a suggestion that students are most likely to hit a state of creative flow when the challenge and the task match. So the challenge of the task matches the perceived ability level. And when that happens, you hit a state of flow, or you're more likely to, as opposed to times where if the task is too easy, a kid gets bored. If it's too difficult, a kid gets frustrated. Here's where you can empower your students to own their learning. And the way you do it is you provide them with the scaffolding, but you make it optional. Through conferences and self-assessment, they can determine where they're struggling, and they can figure out what resources they need to improve. Sometimes they might need a tutorial video. Sometimes they might need a peer to explain a concept or a skill. And other times they might just need sentence stems or graphic organizers. But instead of the teacher building the scaffolding for the students, this is a chance for the students to find the tools and tutorials and scaffold their own learning. A little nuance here. There are times when you just have to build some scaffolding for students. This is especially true of students who are younger, sometimes with certain students who are special ed and struggle with certain areas in executive function. This is an area where you might have to do some of the scaffolding for them. But more often, you will need to model the process of finding the resources and tutorials for them. If you've really modeled it well for them, then even students who struggle with the scaffolding can become more and more independent and figure out how to scaffold the learning on their own for themselves. As the year progresses, what happens is the students feel more empowered and they'll begin to own more of the scaffolding process. So that's another barrier. Sometimes the barrier, and again, that's the barrier of just not knowing how to do it, right? So scaffolding fits that barrier. That answers the question. And again, it's letting them own it. But sometimes the barrier is confusion. Members of a group won't know where to start or what to do. They might look checked out, but they're actually just overwhelmed. This is a lesson in learning how to engage in project management. When groups have clarified the roles and delegated the tasks, they are able to help one another out in figuring out their mastery toward the finished task. They'll be able to monitor the project progress and make adjustments, fix things, change things. Even then, though, this can be tricky. A natural leader might come across as bossy or naggy when he or she is trying to get another member on task. So one solution is to ask students to visualize what they will accomplish and explain that visualization to a partner. And this helps them with clarity. The idea, again, is just that students should be able to have a clear picture in their mind in terms of what they're supposed to be doing and how they're doing in getting it done. And as they visualize it, as they engage in project management, they're able to improve their metacognition, and that allows them to honestly own more of the project planning process. So we're going to be getting into project planning in a future podcast, I think probably next week. But that's the idea. They should be able to own the project management process. Ultimately, the biggest issue for engagement, though, is motivation and buy-in. But when students have a voice and choice in choosing the topics, when they get to ask the questions, generate the ideas, create the prototypes, when they get to own the process, there's more of a vested interest. And this means, you know, this buy-in, this motivation means they're willing to do the hard work. And, you know, I love there's an idea from Chris Lehman, and he says that if you get the same project back from every student, that's not a project, that's a recipe. And so if students aren't following recipes, if they're truly owning this process, they have full buy-in, then they're going to work harder to actually finish it. We often use the expression self-directed learners to describe students who are focused, determined, and able to take charge of their own learning. While we often think of these as individuals as being self-directed, the best collaborative teams also have this self-direction. So in order for collaborative projects to work, students have to be self-starters. They need to feel the permission to take initiative and own the process. This can be tricky because many students will have become dependent on teachers in the past to prompt them to get started. Often a student will ask, you know, am I allowed to do that? You'll hear students say, I'm waiting for the teacher to tell me what to do. And the idea of being self-directed, that this first piece of being a self-starter is that you don't have to wait for permission. You need to be able to get started automatically. But it doesn't end there. Starting something is one thing. Many great ideas fizzle out within a few months when people lose interest. There's this often overlooked, gritty, and difficult side about projects. And it's this idea of being a self-manager. If being a self-starter is about sparking innovation and just getting started in the midst of, you know, chaos, self-management is all about knowing how to stick to deadlines and routines. And this second part is a huge part of guaranteeing that every student is participating. And again, this is why project management is such a valuable key piece of the process. When students engage in project management, they move toward self-direction. They figure out how to self-start while also learning how to plan for the projects and monitor their progress. And again, we'll be exploring this particular topic of project management in the next podcast in this series, and I hope you check it out because, you know, we're going to dive into what the project management process looks like. So with this in mind, I just want to say it's not always going to be perfect. You're going to have some students who fail to participate in projects. But when there's true group ownership, when motivation and skill level, buy-in, scaffolding, when all of those awareness, clarity, all of those things are a part of the design process. As you design these projects for students, there's going to be better participation. And you might not have 100% participation all the time, but what you can have is all of your students participating most of the time. And that is something powerful. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this episode or this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day and go make something awesome.